Okay, good day, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mike Buck, Chief Executive Officer of Petromitad Limited. And in accordance with the Articles of Association of the company, I've been nominated by the board to preside as chairperson of this meeting. I'd like to start by welcoming everybody in this annual general meeting of the company, which comprises an actual meeting here in Ulaanbaatar and an online audio feed to shareholders and other attendees. May I start by asking everyone here in this room to ensure that their mobile phone and other electronic devices are switched off. All those in attendance in Ulaanbaatar have been briefed on emergency evacuation procedures prior to the start of the meeting. There are no fire drills planned for today, so if the fire alarm does go off, it's real. So please evacuate the building as quickly as possible. It's just after 4 p.m. local time, so under Article 53 of the Articles of Association of the company, the quorum for an annual general meeting is two members, and as the required quorum is present, I formally declare the meeting open. Before moving to the formal business of the meeting, I would like to take this opportunity to provide a brief summary of the company's activities during 2023 and update you on the status of activities and our plans for 2024. On Block 20 in Door Nord Province in the east of the country, 2023 proved to be another frustrating year in that operational activity on our Heron oil discovery was once again stymied by the land access issue. A major step forward was achieved in July of last year when, as part of a long and complex intra-governmental process, we were able to secure cabinet approval of the Block 20 exploitation area's certification as state special purpose land. Block 20 is the first oil exploration area to have been granted this status, and once the certification process is complete, it will simplify considerably the permitting procedures required in order to be able to operate. Unfortunately, cabinet approval was not the final step in the government's process, and some more documentation was required to be signed off by various subordinate government agencies. As such, the remaining steps in the process should have been formalities, but frustratingly, the certification process was held up at provincial government level. Despite the company lobbying and interacting with all the agencies involved, by year's end, it had not been possible to secure the approval of the provincial governor on the key tripartite agreement, a two-page document that summarizes the management of special purpose lands, even though cabinet had sanctioned the certification and the agreement had already been signed off by the other two signatories, namely the Central Land Agency and the Ministry of Mining. Our efforts have continued into 2024 to have the government complete the certification process, without which local land use approvals are required, and these have been very hard for anybody to get in Door Nord Province over the last 6 years. While I do not wish to bore shareholders with too much detail on complex matters of Mongolian land law, I do wish to share information as to why and how this matter is now held up. In summary, the provincial governor is refusing to sign the tripartite agreement because the Block 20 area approved by cabinet overlaps with a previously approved provincial protected area. And under the principle of no overlaps, which is applied to such areas, the governor insists the overlap is resolved before he will approve the tripartite agreement. So that requires either cabinet to reduce the Block 20 area to remove the overlap, or the Provincial Citizens Representatives Committee to change the coordinates of its protected area. Petromitad has made its position clear. Firstly, the land law allows cabinet to take any area for state special purpose other than areas that already have the same classification. So in our case, state special purpose trumps provincial protected, so the province must reduce its area to remove the overlap. The whole of Block 20 is important to the company and to Mongolia, as it is all highly prospective for oil, which will be needed to supply the country's new oil refinery. Secondly, the overlap was created by the province with the declaration of its protected area in 2014, which impinged on Block 20 PSC, which was signed in 2006. So the breach of no overlap principle was the fault of the government at provincial level for proposing an overlapping area and centrally for not preventing it. While the solution to this would seem straightforward and easy to achieve, progress has been very slow. Various central government agencies have acted at the company's request to remove this obstruction, but to date this has involved agencies making written requests to the province for an explanation of the holdup, even though the provincial governor has already set out his reasoning in writing. We have also proposed, and the Land Agency and the Ministry of Mining have accepted, that we be allowed to work in the non-overlapping area, and I should say that Heron 1 and all areas identified for 2024 operations are not within the overlap, whilst the government fixes the overlapping problem. This proposal has so far been ignored by the Dornod governor, but we continue to push. It's our view that the intransigence of Dornod province on all matters related to the oil sector stems from the fact that this province hosts 95% of the country's oil production, and for the last 20 years, the authorities deem that they have had all the hassle and none of the benefits that accrue from oil operations on their land. Any such historical shortcomings are not the fault of Petromitad, and we intend to operate in accordance with all laws and in full cooperation with the local authorities for the benefit of all stakeholders, and we are very keen to have the opportunity to do so. Parliamentary elections are now looming in Mongolia and will take place in late June. Some officials have told us that the land certification will be completed after the election, but as we point out, Petromitad and its shareholders have been waiting far too long already, and the 2024 operating season should not be lost. The company continues to chase this matter and hopes that the pressure it is applying will finally produce some urgency in government to resolve the problem. At the same time, we are reviewing the legal recourse the company may have under Mongolian and applicable international legislation if Mongolia continues to fail to fix this issue. Now, recognising that the central government process is proving problematic, the company engaged with the district authorities to secure local level approvals for land usage for 2024. At a meeting of the Matad Citizens Representative Committee at the end of February, the company's application for land use in 2024 was approved, covering all the areas in which the company wishes to operate during the year. Following this approval, the company has been liaising with the local authorities to secure the Matad governor's resolution to back it up and the land use agreement. We're working to correct misinformation about the company from local activists and protesters that have been critical of oil production operations in the area for some time and who have been protesting online and in person against the committee's decision. The execution of the aforementioned documents will allow work in the area chosen for 2024 operations to go ahead, irrespective of the slow progress of the central government process to complete the certification of Block 20 exploitation area as special state special purpose land. Although we have not completed the local land use process yet, we are hopeful that we will, and so we are gearing up to have Heron 1 completed for production and negotiating with our neighbours PetroChina to use their processing facilities, export route and oil sales agreement to make sure that the oil produced has a route to market on startup. We will update further on Block 20 as our efforts generate the progress we are constantly chasing. On an operationally more positive note, whilst the land issue prevented infield activity in Block 20 during 2023, in Block 5, Petromitad was able to conduct an exploration drilling program with the full support of the local authorities. This area does not have the oil-related baggage that Dornod province suffers from, and the welcome and appreciation received from locals in the area of operation showed that our procedures and community interactions can generate the necessary cooperative environment. In June, July 2023, we drilled the Velociraptor 1 well on the central culmination of Big Shallow Inversion Anticline. This was a high-impact, low-cost wildcat well targeting big resource potential, and success would have been transformational for Mongolia. Unfortunately, the well was dry, and I don't want to be one of those explorers that talks about technical success, but there are a few positives from the well that are worth noting. We had prognosed pre-drill that the well might find thick, high-porosity sands that Mongolian subsurface geology has been sadly lacking to date. Our prognosis proved correct. Three thick, high-quality sand sections were intersected. This highlights the potential for good sand development in the basins of Mongolia that improve their commercial potential. We were able to use a small truck-mounted rig and drill the well all in for $2 million, which is an excellent result considering the remoteness of the location. Such low-cost, small-footprint operations can be repeated for shallow prospects elsewhere. We relied entirely on our in-house Mongolian staff to run this operation, which was executed on time, on budget, with no HSE issues and no environmental impacts. And as mentioned before, the interaction with the authorities and residents in the two districts involved demonstrates that our community engagement strategy is robust and fit for purpose. Whilst the Block 5 exploration period will end in July 2024 and the acreage will go back to the government, the lessons learned have been used in the selection of new exploration acreage in Mongolia. As we've previously reported, Petromatat has been chosen as a preferred contractor for two new areas. We do not expect these areas to be awarded before the 2024 elections are completed, but that is not a concern as we want to focus our 2024 activities on Block 20. And finally, I promise, a few words on our renewable energy initiative, which is showing signs of significant progress. The Sunstep Renewable Energy Joint Venture has two high-graded projects. The first involves a green hydrogen demonstration project at Mongolia's major Oyu Tolgoi copper and gold mine, in which Rio Tinto is the major investor. An exclusive memorandum of understanding has been signed with Oyu Tolgoi and with Japanese Overseas Environmental Cooperation Center to develop this project. Through the involvement in the venture of OECC, the partnership has already secured some Japanese government grant funding, and an application for more is expected to be made in due course. The total grant funding for a project such as this could be up to 40% of the capital expenditure requirement. Oyu Tolgoi in the South Gobi region of Mongolia is one of the largest known copper and gold deposits in the world, and we're delighted to see Sunstep cooperating on this exciting project. The second high-graded project is the Chur 50 megawatt battery energy storage system. Chur is in central Mongolia at a key location on the national grid. The government has identified the need for substantial battery storage here to help stabilize the grid and to reduce high-cost import of power from China and Russia at peak hours when Mongolia cannot meet domestic demand, and the economically wasteful export of power during off-peak periods when the country's base load exceeds the domestic demand. Sunstep has already secured approval of the feasibility study from the Ministry of Energy and is now preparing the application for the license to construct. This project could be online as early as 2025, and the government is very keen to move it ahead as quickly as possible. Mongolia recently commissioned its first battery storage system, an 80 megawatt project, which had major positive impact through what was a very hard winter. The Ministry of Energy has identified a significant need for battery storage around the country, and Sunstep is well positioned as an early entrant to be a major player in this sector. In addition to these two projects, Sunstep is working up a substantial pipeline of projects from small to huge and on various timelines. We are confident that this will generate an exciting portfolio, and we look forward to updating shareholders further at the appropriate moment. To conclude my opening remarks, the board of the company would like to thank its staff for their efforts and to thank its shareholders for their support and patience in the face of hugely frustrating delays. We continue to work tirelessly to resolve the issues obstructing the progress of our oil field development. So with that, I will now move to the formal business of this annual general meeting. We have apologies from our other directors, D. Enkmer, B. Shinizaya, and Tim Bushell, who unfortunately could not be with us here today. Brief biographies and details of areas of expertise for each director are provided on the company's website. We also have in attendance our department managers. Before commencing with the formal business of the meeting, I will very briefly explain the procedures we shall follow. The notice convening the meeting sets out six resolutions which will be proposed. Before the first resolution is proposed, there will be an opportunity for those who are in attendance in Ulaanbaatar to ask questions about any of the resolutions. The company has given shareholders the opportunity to submit any questions they may have prior to the meeting via email. Those who are listening online can also submit questions via the platform. I will answer these questions on any matters relating to the other matters relating to the company's business after the final resolution has been considered. If you do have a question, please state your name and the capacity in which you are speaking. That is, whether you are a shareholder, proxy, or representing a corporate shareholder. I will either answer the questions myself or will refer them to the management team as appropriate. I will call for a vote on a show of hands on each of the resolutions. Should any resolution not be passed on a show of hands, I intend to, in accordance with the Articles of Association of the company, demand a poll to be taken 10 minutes after the conclusion of this meeting in respect of any resolution. If a resolution is passed on a show of hands, I will announce the results of the proxy votes after voting on each resolution. Results of any poll vote will be announced by the company following the conclusion of the poll. I would now like to commence the formal business of the meeting as set out in the article in the notice of the annual general meeting dated the 2nd of April 2024. The notice includes the six resolutions to be proposed at the meeting. With your consent, I propose to take the notice convening the meeting as read. Copies of the directors' current service agreements and letters of appointment and copy of the proposed new memorandum of articles of association of the company with a copy of the existing memorandum and articles of association marked to show changes being proposed are available for inspection at the back of this room. I would now like to invite questions from those in attendance in Ulaanbaatar on any of the resolutions to be put before the meeting today. Any questions on any other matters relating to the company's business shall be answered after the final resolution has been considered. This will ensure that we proceed with the formal business of the meeting in a timely and orderly fashion. Any questions? As there are no questions, we move to the agenda and the resolutions contained in the notice. Resolution number one, receive and adopt the annual report and accounts. The directors' report and the audited accounts of the company for the year ended 31st of December 2022, together with the auditor's report on those accounts, have been in your hands for the statutory period. With your permission, I will take them as read. I propose that the directors' report and the audited accounts of the company for the year ended 31st of December 2022 be duly received and adopted. Will those in favor of the resolution please raise their hand? Will those against the resolution please raise their hand? I declare the resolution carried by the required majority. In relation to resolution one, the company received in total 261,108,894 proxy votes in favor, 900,079 proxy votes against, and 410,139 votes were withheld of the resolution. Resolution number two, appointment of the auditor and power of directors to fix the auditor's remuneration. The next business is the appointment of the company's auditor, Hall Chadwick WA Audit Pty Ltd, to hold office until further notice and authorizing the directors to fix the auditor's remuneration. I now put resolution two to the meeting. Will all those in favor of the resolution please raise their hand? Will all those against the resolution please raise their hand? I declare the resolution carried by the required majority. In relation to resolution two, the company received in total 261,058,894 proxy votes in favor, 950,079 proxy votes against, and 410,139 votes were withheld of the resolution. Resolution number three, re-election of Enkma Davanyan. The next business is the re-election of Ms. Dee Enkma, who is our non-executive chairperson, retiring pursuant to Article 89 of the Articles of Association and offering herself for re-election. I now propose that Ms. Dee Enkma, who retires pursuant to Article 89 of the Articles of Association, being eligible, offering herself for re-election, be reappointed as a director of the company. Will all those in favor of the resolution please raise their hand? Will all those against the resolution please raise their hand? I declare the resolution carried by the required majority. In relation to Resolution 3, the company received in total 256,675,979 proxy votes in favour, 4,614,578 proxy votes against, and 1,128,555 votes were withheld of the resolution. Resolution number 4, power of the directors to allot shares. The next item on the agenda is Resolution 4, the director's authority to allot the ordinary shares in the company up to an aggregate nominal amount of US$3,712,945.34. The full text of this resolution is detailed in the notice. By way of explanation, this resolution, if passed, authorises the directors to allot shares up to the aggregate nominal value specified in the resolution and will be subject to the preemption provisions in the articles as amended by Resolution 5 if passed. As at today's date, there are 1,113,883,601 ordinary shares in issue. I now put Resolution 4 to the meeting. Will all those in favour of the resolution please raise their hand? Will all those against the resolution please raise their hand? I declare the resolution carried by the required majority. In relation to Resolution 4, the company received in total 251,320,120 proxy votes in favour, 9,945,753 proxy votes against, and 1,153,239 votes were withheld of the resolution. Resolution number 5, special resolution, amendments to articles of association, disapplication of preemption rights. The next resolution, which is to be proposed as a special resolution, would amend the company's articles of association to renew the authority to disapply preemption rights on the issuing of ordinary shares representing approximately 33% of the total issued ordinary share capital of the company. The full text of the resolution is detailed in the notice. A special resolution requires a 75% majority of those voting to vote in favour of the resolution in order for it to be passed. I now put Resolution 5 to the meeting. Will all those in favour of the resolution please raise their hand? Will all those against the resolution please raise their hand? I declare the resolution carried by the required majority. In relation to Resolution 5, the company received in total 251,265,481 proxy votes in favour, 10,341,464 proxy votes against, and 812,167 votes were withheld of the resolution. Resolution number 6, special resolution, authority to make market purchases. The final resolution, which is to be proposed as a special resolution, would empower the directors pursuant to Article 14.1b(3) of the Articles of Association until the conclusion of the next annual general meeting of the company to exercise all of the powers of the company to repurchase ordinary shares in the open market with an aggregate nominal value of not more than 15% of the aggregate nominal value of the share capital of the company in issue as at the date of the notice of this meeting. A special resolution requires a 75% majority of those voting to vote in favour of the resolution in order for it to be passed. I now put Resolution 6 to the meeting. Will all those in favour of the resolution please raise their hand? Will all those against the resolution please raise their hand? I declare the resolution carried by the required majority. In relation to Resolution 6, the company received in total 259,919,290 proxy votes in favour, 2,089,683 proxy votes against, and 410,139 votes were withheld of the resolution. Any other business? Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of today's formal proceedings. I shall now open up our Q&A session. And before we take questions from the meeting in Ulaanbaatar and from those online, I will first read out the questions that have been submitted in advance, and I or a member of my team will attempt to answer them. There have been quite a few, so thank you for those who took the time to submit them. We'll try and get through them in a reasonably orderly fashion. So the first question, and several others after it, came from Mr. Tyler Davis. Thank you very much for these. First question, will shareholders be disadvantaged again by a massively discounted fundraise which only benefits preferential parties? Well, of course, nobody likes dilution and nobody likes discount. In the last two raises that the company did, we did our very best to allow everybody to participate, or at least retail participation. Unfortunately, you do have to be quick, and it can be a little bit geographically limited as well. I like all companies that I've raised money for, I like to try and make sure there's an opportunity for everybody to participate, and that is what we'd like to do again. But obviously, I note, and Mr. Davies isn't the only one to say, that discount and dilution are nobody's favorite subjects. So we only do this kind of thing as effectively a last resort. Second question, is there an avenue to reduce or eliminate further dilution in the upcoming raise by obtaining another loan from Petrovis or from an alternative source? Unfortunately, the risk profile of the oil and gas business makes it very difficult to get debt. Banks want proof of a reliable stream of production revenue, which obviously at the moment we don't have. Petrovis, and we have discussed this with Petrovis over the years. Petrovis says that they want the, they also would like to see some proof that we would actually be able to pay back the loan if taken. We're always looking for alternative sources. We never give up. What are the funding options being envisaged to grow the renewables business? We are looking at foreign partner CapEx investment or further dilution via issuance of more shares in our renewables business. The renewables business is a bit different. The debt profile is different. Everybody knows that the wind's going to blow and the sun's going to go up and go down. So debt funding is a lot easier to get than it is in oil and gas. That also has a proven precedent here in Mongolia. So we are very, very hopeful that a large portion of the capital requirement for any of our projects on renewable energy will actually be able to be funded by debt. Obviously, there will be an equity component, and SunStep is looking at everything from getting people to invest at the asset level to vendor financing, to advanced payment financing, and is also looking at SunStep corporately to see whether SunStep could raise money in its own name. So all of those aspects are being looked at as we pursue this portfolio. We're hoping that SunStep will be in a position to start investing one way or another on the projects it is developing, and all of those options are being considered. Next question, do we have a timeline for a dividend introduction which would not only help shareholders realize some revenue return, but also increase a positive sentiment and encourage larger fund investments? Obviously, our ability to pay a dividend depends on our production revenue. The basin history of the area in which we've discovered oil shows that producing wells have a tendency to decline, some of them faster than others, until pressure maintenance is available, and pressure maintenance has been done so far with water injection, which obviously requires the drilling of water injection wells. So we are going to need more than one producing well to give us revenue that we believe will provide discretionary cash flow, which could be used to pay dividend. But we are very well aware of the attractions and the importance of a timeline towards dividend. So it's not something that we ignore. I'd like to be in a position where we're generating enough cash flow to fund our operations, the development of the field, fund our ongoing overhead costs and have money that can be dispersed in that way. Next question, would there be any impediment to a PetroChina or DQE takeover approach, and is this likely? There's no impediments. Fair to say that PetroChina is quite busy with its own operations at the moment, but Petromitad has made it clear to its neighbors, its peer companies in country, and to the outside world that we are open to partnering of any kind, and so we are available for that. Next question, are you able to release details on the new blocks the company has secured? I prefer not to at the moment, as they haven't yet to be awarded to us, only to say that yes, we are the chosen contractor for two areas. They are both very large blocks, as is Mongolia's Way. And we have chosen areas that share basins known to be productive for oil in northern China. So we won't just be wildcatting in areas that are unproven for hydrocarbons. As the blocks are very large, we do expect that there will be some decent sized prospects within them, but we also wanted to make sure that there were some proven basins extending from areas in production into the areas we were signing. Number seven, would the management team consider a cut or part suspension of salary if, God forbid, we were unable to commence Block 20 operations this year? I can tell you that the management has already taken salary cuts in order to make sure that the cash within the business is able to last as long as possible whilst these projects get fixed and the obstructions are taken away. Our non-executive directors have also agreed to a fee reduction, so that is already in hand. Next question, why does the company have to be pushed into basic PR initiatives like Twitter platform X Post when these are often the lifeblood of small AIM-listed company for AIM-listed company sentiment? We have one geography with a very slow-moving bureaucracy. News flow is important, but in that case, news flow can be very slow. We want to keep people informed, but we don't want to be repetitive or boring and just issue posts because it's time we did. We post and obviously issue RNSs as soon as we have important stuff to say. And in the case of our Twitter feed, we like to try and keep people up to date with what's going on in the background because some people do find that interesting. Does the company envisage any issue with regards to change of government following on from the upcoming elections? It's hard to say what will happen. The current government won with a big majority, but a strong government doesn't seem to have been able to fix our issue easily. As a company, we maintain good but apolitical relations with all of the agencies with which we deal to minimize the impact of any political change. So hard to say exactly what's going to happen, but we think we're well placed to work with whoever is in charge once the election is over. Next one. Can anything be done by central government regarding the local governor's stance to hinder Petromitad's operation? You'd have thought so, wouldn't you? So far, that is proving quite hard to get the hard thing done. We continue to push. We're not very pleased that at the moment, various agencies are asking for an explanation when an explanation has already been given. And we have made a proposal to operate whilst the overlap issue is fixed, that two out of the three signatories within government have already agreed to. Yes, it's something that frustrates us, but we are continuing to push very hard. It can't be that a provincial governor should be able to stop centrally government sanctioned operations like ours that are very important when the country is spending a lot of money on a domestic oil refinery. Next question, can the company focus on building the cash balance sheet first before doing any more raises to fund future drilling and focus on using the money made once Heron is on stream? I think, as I mentioned before, reliable revenue is what we need. And it may not come from just one well, it may. And if it does, then our options will be much improved. But we'll need to see how the well performed and in terms of how much revenue that actually generates to make sure we have enough to keep that revenue stream growing and to be able to operate the business. Next question is quite a long one. To attract more long-term investors in the form of institutional investors and retail, can the company focus on two things which will reflect growth in the company, reflect in the share price and market capitalization? Namely, a dividend policy which is sustainable and paid out twice or quarterly, starting once Hera is on stream within 6 months to have first payout in December 2024. A buyback scheme as a lot of shareholders have been diluted over the decade and that to start in 2025. So on dividends and buybacks, kind of addressed our revenue situation. We recognize the attractions these days, though, of both. Even for companies of our market cap and in our sector, dividends are important to shareholders these days. So we haven't lost sight of that. As soon as we have reliable revenue that fulfills the company's needs and its work program needs, then obviously we would look to do what we can in terms of dividends. Haven't really discussed share buybacks, but we will in future if the scenario presents itself. Next question, why have legal channels not been taken to resolve the situation after the cabinet approved the Block 20 exploitation area? Mongolian law has been tried by another operator. They were shut down about a year or a little bit more than a year before we were shut down. They decided to go through the Mongolian courts and they are still fighting. So they've had more time on standby than us. That's the Mongolian law alternative. The international law that we could use has the chance to be a bit more successful. It will also likely be long-winded if we were ever to go that route. And obviously, once you've pulled that trigger, work is suspended. It's a big step to take. We haven't taken it yet, but we always prepare for the worst whilst hoping for the best. So we are doing in-house review and preparations of the what if we needed to pull that particular trigger. As I say, it's a big step to do that internationally, and at the moment we haven't chosen to do so. Next question, what is the real reason for delay? It cannot take 5 years to resolve a land access issue. Is it personal due to Petromitad taking the provincial governor to court back in 2019? Well, as I alluded to in my opening remarks, Dornod province has a bad experience with the oil industry. And we think that's where this intransigence comes from. It doesn't just affect Petromitad, it affects a number of operators in Dornod province, mining as well as petroleum, but I would say that it affects all of the petroleum operators in that particular province. So we've looked for evidence of malice directed particularly at us. We have not been able to find any. All of our contacts in government tell us that that is not the case. This is just unfortunately a difficult problem to resolve because the land law is a big deal in Mongolia. Whether then the governor is taking it personally, I mean, we have a dialogue with the governor, not always a comfortable one, but in terms of is he taking it personally, he says not. He says if we operate within the law, he has our full support. The only challenge that we made to the governor in court was actually to appeal against his eviction order, his eviction notice in 2019. So arguably he started it. We did appeal that. We lost at the local level and we were advised by the regulator not to pursue it as the government would fix it. We're still waiting. Next question, why has 10 million been spent in wages when this could have benefited the locals? I'm not quite sure which locals. If it's the locals in Matadsum at the moment, they don't really deserve it. But we have a cooperation agreement with Matadsum. So as soon as we are able to operate, we will be making a voluntary contribution each year as set out in the production sharing contract and the petroleum law. In terms of spending money on wages, we're trying to maintain our operating capability, which we do at an absolute minimum manning level, but we want to have a company ready to pounce as soon as these permits are in place. If we let our operating capability go, that would probably mean that we decided to go down the legal route when maybe all we would need would be one lawyer. We're not at that point. We want to develop this field. We want to do more in the oil sector in Mongolia, and we want to maintain our operating capability until we have that that opportunity. Should the wage bill be so high when no activities have taken place in the past 4 years, are staff getting paid for sitting at home? They're not getting paid for sitting at home. As I've already said, management have taken significant cuts already, and people are working hard to fix the issues that we face. So no, they're not sitting at home getting paid effectively to do nothing. What has happened to the mining minister's three-month guideline? That's very, very well remembered by this particular shareholder. Are they taking Petromitad for a ride? In the government's defence, which I do on this occasion through gritted teeth, this is the first time that the government has gone through this process of special purpose land for an oil concession. The times it did it previously, they were done as mining licenses. So this is the first time this has been used under legislation that was brought in 2017. The minister's promise that he would fix it in 3 months was actually the exploitation license. And we did get the exploitation license, although it took 9 months from when he said it would take three. But it was new to everybody at the time. That continues to be the case. Unfortunately, as I said before, the government's process on land did not finish with the cabinet resolution to allow us to have special purpose land for Block 20. There are steps still requiring to be taken, and those are the ones that are currently holding us up. The next question, I think, is basically already been answered because it relates to the reduction of pay. Next question. Are all fees still being paid for Block 20 license area whilst we wait for these formalities to go ahead? It's been a few years since the exploitation license was awarded, and I would like to know if we're paying for something we cannot use. Short answer to that is no. Fees are not being paid on Block 20 until the land issue has been fixed. And we have told the regulator of that. And although they haven't actually written back to say that's okay, they haven't asked us for the money, so we think we're good there. Then there's a few more questions that I will go through. This one says there's a large degree of concern among shareholders at the level of cash remaining to service the ongoing commitments and forward plans. How long will the current cash holding last, assuming oil sale income will be some way off? And what are the plans to cover expenditure going forward? Does the group expect there will be an interim need for a share capital raising? And if so, will all shareholders be provided with an opportunity to participate? Or alternatively, have arrangements been made for a bank or soft loan from a close interested party such as Petrovis? I think I've covered kind of most of this in preceding answers. The current cash holding of the company will last until 2025. And as I said, savings are being put in place that will extend that life as much as possible. We do have an existing loan facility in place with Petrovis that they were kind enough to put in place for us back in 2021. It's not drawn, but there's always the possibility that it could. So that could extend the current cash life further. If we were to raise, as I said earlier on, we want to make sure there's a mechanism for shareholders, all shareholders, to participate if possible. Next question. This is the longest one of the lot. The current ridiculously lengthy impasse in respect to the land entry permit is considered by almost all shareholders as unbelievable. Please include me in that. Particularly when viewed in context of petroleum sharing contracts, quite specific, extensive contract requirements. and exploitation and land entry special purpose certification permits that are required. Petromitat would have addressed them at the time the contract was executed or long before the need arose. How is central government assisting in overcoming this impasse? And do you think the matter could be resolved more quickly if they were to intervene more strongly and with some urgency, given the huge time that has already elapsed? Also, is there a role potentially for the British ambassador to assist? Mention has been made in the RNS of April 25th that the group is looking at legal recourse it may have if delays continue. Can you expand upon this potential step? I think some of this I've covered already. It's the effectively in the land law, it's the 2017 legislation that complicated this situation. And as I say, that has only been, as I've said, that has only been applied a few times, and it's very new for all concerned. So that is what has caused this problem. On in terms of government response, after several years of refusing to even discuss local land permits, the district government is now showing signs of wanting to help because I think they recognize that Petromitad is earnest in its wish to cooperate, will provide financial contribution to the area in which it works. So district is showing signs of helping. Provincial, not so much at the moment, and central government is very, very supportive, but slow and hasn't done the what the we think is the obvious thing. It's to just order provincial government to act. We're still pushing for that. Urgency is what we need and have always needed, and obviously we're not happy that we haven't got the level of urgency that we wanted. But we continue to push. And there are various legal means we might have to take that would make that even more apparent that urgency is required. The British ambassador has been involved, is supporting us behind the scenes, and has offered herself and her staff to help out whenever necessary. I've said a little bit about the legal recourse already, so I don't think I'll go through that again. Finally, are you able to provide an outline of the business plan going forward for Petromitad Limited in respect of Sunstep, the renewable energy joint venture, hopefully including plans of cash flow funding for the next 5 years, which it would be assumed would have been a basic prerequisite for the Japanese government's grant funding involvement? So, as I mentioned, we're looking at all of the available funding options for Sunstep. We can just be a developer and flip what we develop for a premium or for a carry or for a combination of both. Or we can stay involved at a working interest level that we think we can afford. The latter is our preference. We don't want to just develop and flip. We want to stay involved. And I hope to be able to say more soon, but obviously, as I said before, we're looking at all the ways we might fund the venture. Some of the projects that we're working on will require quite large equity tickets, and it is not our current intention that we would use Petromitad as a vehicle to raise that money. So, Sunstep is working very, very hard and is doing a very, very good job, in my view. So, we'll now have a look on around the room for any questions in the room. Anybody here got any questions that they would like to ask? Okay, no questions from the room. How about the online platform? Have we got any questions there? Okay, we have two questions here that I'm struggling to read, but it said, is there likelihood to be a need for future fundraising given the slippage in the program? What is the deadline that Heron needs to be resolved by to ensure a fundraise is not required? Okay, on the first one, I think I've given the feedback in terms of how long our current cash resources last. So, through to 2025, with a little bit of wiggle room, if we're able to get Petrovis to support us once again. In terms of what's the deadline, well, obviously, as I've also said, we need to know how Heron is going to be producing what kind of sustainable revenue we can get out of the field in its early days to decide exactly then whether we need more money to drill further wells and ultimately injectors for pressure maintenance. So that one, unfortunately, I can't really answer today, but we'll be looking at that as soon as we get the well on stream. Any others coming in? Yes, okay. Can Petrovis, our largest shareholder and Mongolian, help in any way? Ditto for the UK authorities. Well, I've mentioned the UK authorities. In terms of Petrovis, they are being very, very supportive. Obviously, they always have been as a shareholder, but in terms of navigating our way through the corridors of power at provincial and central level, they are helping us on a day-to-day basis. They are also frustrated that it's taking this long. And they, like a number of other people, say, yes, and unfortunately it's an election year and that doesn't help. Yeah, I know it's an election year, but there's been other years when it wasn't an election year and it didn't move either. So I'm not particularly satisfied by that. But anyway, Petrovis is doing what they can. They are helping. Notwithstanding the delays, are you confident we will produce oil from Heron 1 in the 2024 season? Well, we're not going to do it illegally, so we need a permit. We are hopeful that the district solution, the Matad Sum level, will actually get us a permit quickly enough to be able to use the 2024 operating season. By bitter experience, I'm not sure that the central government process can suddenly pick up speed, but we're trying to do everything we can to make it do so. But if we can get the district level approval, then we've bought ourselves some time for the central approval to go through. So I can't promise, but believe me, that's what keeps me awake at night. Mike, can you please confirm specifically that all equipment has been purchased and is available to put Heron 1 in operation, that all funding required that was part of the last raise is still set aside and available? Yes, I can confirm that. Can PM promote more actively that Petromatad are a Mongolian company and the main shareholders are Petrovis, and we are working for the Mongolian people? Yes, we do that all the time, despite the fact that we have an international listing. We have an almost entirely Mongolian staff. Our PSCs are held in Mongolian entities, and we have been doing a concerted effort of winning hearts and minds, and I think those have paid off. We have actually engaged with the activists and the protesters to show them who we are, and that has gone down very well. They recognize that just because our name starts with Petro, it doesn't make us like the other Petros that they're not very happy with. So we are pushing the Mongolian nationality very, very hard. There are just two final questions, I think, to finish up. You'll all be delighted to hear. In respect to the group's balance sheet, are you able to advise at what stage the value of Block 20 oil resource can be included for value in the balance sheet? Also, are you able to advise what the current value of recoverable exploration expenditure that is formally recorded with the government is there, and a time when this value will be represented in the financial accounts? Well, anybody who knows me knows that that's probably beyond my intelligence to answer, but I have asked our financial whizzes, and they tell me that since we follow international accounting standards that require exploration costs to be written off as they are incurred, the balance sheet will not include the value of the oil resources, but instead will include the historical costs that have been accepted by the government for cost recovery, and these will be reinstated into the accounts. The value of the cost pool approved by the government at the moment is $56 million on Block 20, and there's a couple more years still to finalize the audit, and we've been quite successful at getting our cost recoverable claims to be accepted as cost recovery, so we don't have any untoward fear that we might not continue with that progress. And they will start to be reinstated into the financial reports in a prudent fashion once production starts and as well performance demonstrates the capacity of the assets to fully recover their cost. Thank you, Finance, for that. And finally, in the December 19th, 2023 RNS, it was stated that the exploration tender round continued and that we had been selected as preferred contractor for two blocks. What stage has this process reached? When do you anticipate the award? Is it planned that cash flow funding from PSCs will be covered from Block 20 oil revenue in due course, or is a JV arrangement being considered? So of the two blocks that we applied for, the first block, the contract will soon go to the cabinet for their approval to sign it. The second block, the contract for that is starting circulation amongst all the other ministries in Ulaanbaatar before it is then prepared for cabinet review and award. That process for the first block took around about 6 weeks. So we think they will both be ready to be either will be with cabinet or will be before cabinet by the middle of the year. We are not expecting award before the election. We're expecting it after, maybe in 2024. To be honest, we're not pushing that particularly hard because one, we want to exert all our effort in 2024 on Block 20, and two, we've made it a condition precedent of our applications for the two blocks that the land issue is resolved before we'll sign. So we've told the government, well, yeah, by all means, get them ready for signature, but don't expect our signature until we know the land use issue is behind us. In terms of the expenditure for these blocks, the phasing is such that we wouldn't be needing a considerable amount of capital expenditure on the blocks for the first couple of years. So we would hope that by the time they're ready for seismic detailing or exploration drilling, production revenue will be up and running and will be supportive of not only our current needs, but also the needs of the new blocks. We are also open to partnership, and we've mentioned that to a few potentially interested people. So I think that's it. I don't believe we have any more questions. And as that is the case, I am now going to close the meeting. Thank you all for your attendance, and I will pass over to the operator to end the call. Thank you.